From LPM,
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome to The First Cut, an interview series featuring conversations with some of the most talented singer-songwriters recording today. I'm Laura Schein from WFBK in Louisville, Kentucky, and we've asked our guests about some firsts in their lives. Same set of questions, totally different answers. My guest today is Ani DeFranco, a feminist icon and a founding mother of the DIY movement, being one of the first artists to create her own record label in 1990, Righteous Babe Records. Her latest album, Revolutionary Love, delves into the personal and political with no holds barred, and according to Ani, one of her best albums yet. We talk about the new album and her first cut questions, too.
Hey!
It's a real thrill to get to talk to you. And the show's called The First Cut. We'll ask you some questions about some firsts in your life, you know, particularly about music is what it's going to be about mostly. Also, I just want to say quickly, I know that you're extremely busy. You put out a new album, The Prison Project.
Prison Music Project. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, which sounded really interesting. And then also you've got a new single out called Do or Die.
Yeah.
Is that single attached to an album?
It sure is. It is nestled into the middle of what I think might be the best record I've ever made.
But we can do it if we try. Yeah, if we do it, I can do it down.
Wow.
I mean, I know. I usually hate my records before they even can be released, and this time it's different. I don't know if I'm going soft or or if I, you know, sort of find, I think I hit a sweet spot with this new one, so I'm super excited.
And you recorded with some musicians you had never recorded with before?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I just had to squeeze through a tight pandemic spot, and so which ended up being a sort of blessing in disguise. I didn't go into my home studio, which sounds odd because I'm in the middle of isolating, but bringing in my band, you know, to fly, you know.
Yeah.
And I was talking to this fellow who was sort of signed up to help me with the record, and he just said, I was Zooming with him, and he said, listen, if you fly to North Carolina for 6 days, I'll put a band together. We'll do this. And I just said, okay. And I had no idea where I was going, who I was going to play with. And it just, you know, happened to be a brilliant group of people. And we just made it happen. So, yeah.
Were you excited about just having that feeling in general? Or is that something that would normally make you really anxious or nervous about, you know, just...
I was excited, and I was definitely anxious and nervous. And you know, it's funny, you know, of course, we spent the whole 5 days in masks, all of us, in this very tight, not well-ventilated studio, unfortunately, as it turned out, just super stuffy, you know. So there is the added claustrophobia element of being masked all day. But I came away from that 5 days sort of realizing there is a blessing for me, a psychological blessing of being masked. And I have experienced that since then of when I'm around people I don't know, the social anxiety factor for me abated a lot because most of my face was covered.
Interesting.
It sort of helped. Like I was very tense and anxious being amongst strangers and trying to get it right in a matter of days, you know, a lot of pressure, I guess. And, you know, I'm just somebody who in those, when I'm amongst people I don't know, my face kind of goes into this frozen smile and my cheeks start to hurt after an hour or two, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was actually sort of comforting to be hidden, and it helped me, I think, kind of ride that week.
That's interesting. Yeah. So when is the new album due? When will that be out?
Well, we have been aiming for early December this whole time. It's been a very high-speed adventure. But now, you know, we are just, me and my team are discussing, you know, it does seem that between November and January, we may have even more political and social mayhem than we are experiencing
already.
And, you know, the appetite for media to talk about anything other than the mayhem is very low already. So, you know, my team, though I feel very anxious to put it out there, they are now saying maybe we should wait till the new year when somebody might take notice.
I don't know. So on the other hand, the song "Do or Die" is about what we're going through right now. It's our times. And I'm glad you got that single out. You know. But it could also be a balm for some people. You know, to have music that's speaking to the times, what they're going through right now. So I can see I can see both sides. You know.
Yeah.
All I know is your fans wouldn't mind it if you put it out anytime. You know.
Well, I do appreciate that perspective, and I'm going to tell them you're on my side.
Okay, please do.
One more on my side.
Yeah, I'm on your side. So let's talk about some firsts, and this means, you know, kind of going back into your past, but what was the first record you fell in love with?
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and I decided to go back sort of as far as I could to early childhood, and my father had a record collection that, you know, and a turntable. And so those are my very deepest, you know, my musical bedrock was his record collection. Luckily for me, it was an incredible record collection. And I didn't really realize that it took me a long time. It was only recently in my life that I've called up what that music was, and one of the people that my father was a fan of was John Fahey.
I never have my neighbor, never do what is proper, my fair share of labor.
Sort of, I think, alcoholic kind of, troubled acoustic instrumental guitarist. I think he's often folk primitivism is sort of the label attached to him. And anyway, my father had a bunch of John Fahey records, which I only realized again later in life when I saw these record covers and I was like, oh, that cover, I know that. And then I re-listened to that music and it sounded like me. I was like, oh, John Fahey is one of my most fundamental influences, and I obviously love his music. I forgot for 40 years, you know. But yeah, so I went and I picked by the cover, the record that seemed to be deepest embedded in me. There's a record called Blind Joe Death by John Fahey. So I'm going to say that's my first favorite record.
Was it all instrumental?
Yeah. John never sang.
Were you playing guitar at that time? Or did you pick up a guitar right shortly thereafter?
Shortly thereafter. You know, and I have done interviews my whole life where people have asked me, what made you want to play guitar or acoustic guitar? And I say, I don't know. But I think from now on, I'm going to say John Fahey.
Yeah, I'll have to go listen to that and see if his stylings or anything, or your stylings, or anything like this.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. What was the first song you learned on an instrument?
The first song, oh yeah. So I did take guitar lessons for a few years when I was a kid. And I learned how to read music for a hot minute and then forgot all that language, unfortunately, because it would have come in handy as it happens. But I remember, so before, before I learned songs of my bidding, you know, I want to learn Beatles songs or this or that. But even before that, my guitar teacher taught me how to finger pick and play these sort of, anyway, I can remember as a very young child learning The Entertainer by Scott Joplin. Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah. And you do the boom, bump, boom, bump, you know, the bass with your thumb. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, so that was, I remember that as a hard one to conquer, you know, as a beginning guitar player, and a thrill when I did. And I think, yeah, sort of set me off on my finger picking life, really, yeah. You know, that early basis that I had thanks to that teacher.
God, that's a complicated one, yeah. What was the first song you wrote? Of your own?
Well, that one I remember because I started keeping a list. I was 14 when I started writing my own songs, and I just listed their titles on a sheet of yellow, you know, legal pad. And I kept that list for years. It was a running list for years and years. So I had occasion to look back at it enough to embed it in my memory. I don't remember, you know, songs 2 through 86, you know, but I remember the first title on that page was Winter Mist.
Ooh, yeah. Winter Mist.
Yeah, I was getting a jump on my angst. Yeah.
Was it an instrumental, or what, did it have words?
No, it had words. I don't have any idea what those words were. I imagine there was a lot of melancholy in there, as the title implies. But yeah, Winter Mist, I know, was the title.
Did you grow up in a cold place? I mean, yeah.
Buffalo.
Okay, so Buffalo, New York, and that's a pretty chilly place at times, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. What was the first heartache song you connected with?
The first heart. Oh yeah. Well, it's always hard to say with any of these things, but I decided to flash forward a little ways for this to when I was a deviser of heartache myself, you know, and those songs become more important. So now I am about 18 and I'm living in New York and I'm on my own and I'm scrapping around. And I was at that moment in love with Prince already and forevermore. And so I remember I had a cassette of Purple Rain album, and I, you know, I think I literally wore it out. It eventually broke. So I'm just going to go ahead and say Purple Rain.
That's perfect. Did you ever meet Prince or play with Prince, Ani?
I did. I had the opportunity to do both, and it's, you know, I'm very grateful.
Where was that? When and how did that come about?
In the late 90s, I was sort of hitting mainstream media awareness with my indie label, my DIY groundbreakingness than with my music. The media had always recoiled from my music, and there was a lot of putting me down. But then when I just started having indie success that was unprecedented, or I was building my own label, which was a bit unheard of, Prince picked up on this story. This would be the time when he is writing Slave on his cheek and no longer calling himself Prince because he is so desperate to get out of his major label. handcuffs. So at some point, he started talking about me and Righteous Babe in the media and saying he wants to be on Righteous Babe.
You know? Whoa.
Yeah,
oh my
right?
Gosh.
I know. Oh, I was like, call me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it somewhere, you know, maybe it's 98, 9, 2000, somewhere in there. I think it wasn't the turn of the century yet. I was playing in Minneapolis, and this sort of media conversation had been going on between us. And he just showed up to my show. And so that was our first in-person meeting. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have been invited to parties now and then after that, and just be, I mean, to think about it now, I'm just amazed that he, you know, if he was in LA and I played LA, he would show up, or if I played in Minneapolis. So, and, you know, looking back again, I wish I had my act together more and had more class, because if I went to visit him at his show, he was, you know, he told his people, you know, I was treated like I was in with the in crowd. There was a VIP, you know, situation, you know, and I think, but that was not my mode, you know, I'm kind of more street or whatever. So he would show up to my show and he'd just be sitting on a road case side stage, you know, which in retrospect, you know, I kick myself, but.
Well, he kept returning to your show. So that says something. It's not like he expected royal treatment, perhaps, you know?
Yeah, no, he was more flexible than maybe he is thought to be. And a real, you know, really voracious music lover himself, you know? He took an interest in what I was doing, and so many other people, and so much other music. Very, very broad, wide, open, you know, alive through music person.
Yes. Who was the first artist you idolized that you just really got obsessed with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess around that same time when I'm new in New York and I'm sort of inventing myself in earnest. And so I'm going to say I wasn't I was already somewhat infatuated with Prince, but the deepest infatuation that kicked in for me at that time was for my poetry teacher at the New School for Social Research. His name was Sekou Sandiata, and he was my teacher. As I say, I started taking classes at the New School, and I signed up for creative writing, and there he was. And I was instantly in love with him, with his art, with his vibe, with his teaching. I signed up for every class that he gave from then on. And he was not just a poet, but I mean, he was not a musician per se, but he had a band, and he would perform his poetry. He was very much a performance poet, not a page paper poet. And he was a very the rhythm of language was, you know, he was a musical being, though not a musician, and he performed with a band. So, you know, I felt very kindred to him, and he was a big influence. And though he was also a friend more and more, and in later years, I, you know, tried to honor my great love and respect for him by releasing a few of his records, Da Da Do Da Da, with his band, Da Da Do Da Da, on Righteous Babe. I was like starstruck to, you know, until the day he died. Whenever I was in his presence, I was sort of, you know, fluttery and could barely speak. So he was somebody like that for me, just because of the level of respect I felt.
Mm-hmm. So What are you listening to right now that you're loving?
What am I listening to? Gee whiz. I should always prepare myself for that simple question, and yet...
Well, it could be the first thing that comes to mind. Like, you know, I assume that you're listening to other things. I know you have your own radio show, right?
Yeah. Oh my, right. And I mean, we have the busiest season Righteous Babe has ever had with new releases. So I could certainly talk about those beautiful records that I've been enjoying. There's a new Gracie and Rachel album. Duo of violin and piano and harmony vocals. They're wonderful. They've opened for me a lot. We are releasing a Resistance Revival chorus record very soon.
Love them.
Yeah.
Love them. I just started listening to them and Gracie and Rachel,
terrific.
Who I had never heard of before, but I saw your label attached to their name, so I checked them out.
Yeah,
I was really impressed. Yeah,
it's a wonderful everything. Wonderful outfit. You know, just seeing a bunch of beautiful, powerful women feeling each other and feeling themselves and speaking the gospel. You know, and giving voice to all these, you know, civil rights songs and just, you know, important songs from the folk canon and women's music. And yeah, so listening to them and listening to we released a Pieta Brown record a few months back that I just adore.
The sand told the sea you grow. See in your eyes said I'm just passing through.
Pieta and I have become kind of pen pals, and so she is sort of part of my support network these days, and vice versa. And I love listening to her sing. I find it very calming, grounding. We're releasing a Jocelyn McKenzie record, who is one of the Pearl and the Beard band that was as incredible band that broke up a few years ago. So this is her first solo project, and I'm so thrilled that she's back on her horse.
I'll have to check her out too. Not familiar with her. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the most recent song you've learned to play? Like, I guess a cover. Do you do that? Like, learn covers, hear a song, and you're like, I want to learn that.
I do. Yeah. I've been doing this Patreon thing. I don't know if you're familiar, but you have patrons, you know, that sign up on a monthly basis to get stuff from you, and you produce things. And so it's kind of my only paycheck these days that I can count on. So for my patrons, I release I record new stuff every month to just send to them exclusively. Sorry.
Yes.
So I've been doing a lot of that. But the last song that I learned and recorded was actually not for Patreon. Now that I'm thinking about it, it was for another project, a compilation record of, I can't remember the name of it, but it's sort of, you know, Righteous Babes sing songs of other Righteous Babes for young women. That's like the idea. It's for kids, you know, for girls, maybe mostly. And it's just strong women music. And so for that record, a few weeks ago, I learned and recorded Brass in Pocket by the Pretenders. You know, I'm special.
So special. I got to have some of y'all. Attention, give it to me.
Yeah. I love that song.
Yeah, it was really fun. I've always loved that song too, so I was happy when they said yes, that's a acceptable choice.
It's a great one. What's a heartache song you go to now?
A heartache song I go to now. Let's see.
It doesn't necessarily have to mean it's about love, you know. It could be something, heartache over lots of different things, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess most of the music I listen to in my recent life, because I've got kids, and one of them is a 13-year-old girl, and so I listen to her music with her. You know, that's what fills my ears more than anything. And she went through an Amy Winehouse phase that, you know, and, you know, kids can achieve levels of repetition in listening that adults, even super fans, can barely meet. So it was constant Amy Winehouse, and it's, you know, it never gets old, that music. You know, that one hit record that was such perfection. But it's almost like too sad for me sometimes, you know. I guess maybe also knowing her tragic story and death and everything, life, and but it really, you know, it really it affected me all over again in my recent listening of it. She's also a huge Billie Eilish fan, and now so am I. I just think she's great.
I've changed my plans, 'cause I'm in love with my future. Can't wait to meet.
It's great music. What a great gal, you know, mature beyond her years and riding the roller coaster she's on, I think, with great class. And so, yeah, a lot of those songs are sort of swimming around in my head. A lot of melancholy there.
Yeah. What was the name of the first band you ever played with? Did you ever play with a band before your own band?
No. Yeah. No, I mean, I've played in many bands, but none of them had names, except for mine. So that's a little boring, but yeah.
Was it a group of other kids that you were playing with when you first started, or?
I wish. My music life has been quite solitary from the beginning. I mean, I think my life in general took on a solitary bent. You know, I was living on my own when I was 15. So I wasn't, you know, I was moving in the adult world. I didn't have teenage friends, you know, I wasn't living in a child's world. So, and my music was something I did by myself, and it was my way of processing, you know? And so, yeah, I've always fantasized about that other more typical path of being in a group of friends and being in a band and having musical company the whole time. But I was sort of on my own until I was able to hire my own band and not be, you know, so lonely in it.
What was the very first professional gig you had? Where was it?
Yeah, that would have been back in Buffalo. And I, you know, I started getting gigs, I mean, very early. I mean, I started playing in bars when I was not yet a teenager. That was with my sort of mentor at the time. And then when I was 15 as well, I started hosting the open mic at Nietzsche's, and I had a weekly gig on Saturday nights at the Essex Street Pub, and, you know, so that would have been when I started having gigs under my name.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's pretty much all I have. Ani, is there anything else you'd like to add or anything else you'd like to say about maybe your new single or Do or Die?
The new single. I wish I could say I was being dramatic with this song, Do or Die.
'Cause there's foxes in the hen house and bad news every day. And right there on Pennsylvania Avenue, the sheetless KKK.
I really feel that it's becoming all too obvious that that's what, I mean, it's the song itself is a rallying cry to vote, for us all to vote. And I believe that for many people, and I believe this has always been true, but more so than ever, it is a matter of life and death. It is often not rewarding personally to vote. It is, you know, this choice, the lesser of two evils or the compromises involved can feel icky, can feel heavy and like a deterrent. But I just think it's very important that we focus on the fact that whether it's gratifying for your own identity or not, it is a very important act of citizenship that we do at least for other people, some of whom it might make the difference between life and death.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Ani DeFranco, thank you so much for speaking with us today and being one of our guests on The First Cut. It's great to talk with you and great to hear you. And I love the new song and keep on doing what you do.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The First Cut from WFPK and Louisville Public Media, available wherever you get your podcasts. Our show is produced by Stacey Owen, edited by Tyler Franklin and Eric Matthews, and hosted by me, Laura Schein. You can also see our First Cut videos by visiting wfpk.org/The First Cut.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.